concerned. We also are aware of the fact that Ireland, you know, traditionally is a country that has been in support, a student support of Palestine. Can you just tell us a little bit more around the scope of this current protest in Ireland?
So, unlike with sort of football teams and clubs, this is a UEFA Nations Cup. So that means it's an official game between the Irish football team and the Israeli football team. And what the Irish have done already is they've already written to FIFA and UEFA some time back as their football association, saying that Israel needs to be held to account because they... the Israeli Football Association has a number of teams that are affiliated to it that are on illegal occupied land, and that is against the UEFA rules and the FIFA rules, and is the whole occupation and Israeli settler movement is illegal according to international law. But because they've written to call for that already, it becomes a bit of a challenge now when you are forced to play against the very team that you are calling for their expulsion and for them to be held to account for their racist policies and for those settler colonial teams that are part of the association. So it's against the regulations of UEFA for teams to play to be on occupied, illegally occupied territories, and so they're citing legality within the football's legislation.
Now, again, there are certain sectors who might say that one should separate politics from sport. What are the critics of Israel in the Football Federation of Ireland? What are the sentiments around this?
So interestingly, I think it's a far cry from it as a South African nation that has taken Israel to the ICJ for crimes against humanity and genocide. But in the Irish Football Association, they did a poll, and 63% of the players are against Israel playing in Ireland. So they are all for the boycott of apartheid Israel. And then in terms of the supporters, it's over 70% of football supporters in Ireland that support this call for Israel to be isolated for its war crimes against humanity. And they don't separate, and you can't separate the sport from the politics simply because Israel runs a conscription. That means every player in that league that is Israeli is part of the war machine of Israel, and therefore are complicit in the genocide, and therefore they have politicized the sport. Also, Israel has attacked players and athletes, destroyed stadiums and all forms of recreation, and even recently tried to in the West Bank destroy a few soccer fields of some well-known Palestinian football club. So the attack on the sporting facilities and sports athletes and players has been part of this genocide, and therefore it cannot be separated. And good people, people who have lived through forms of colonization and oppression, readily identify with the call for a sports and cultural boycott of an apartheid state and a genocidal state like Israel.
Now, I mean, in South Africa, I think the South African community understands the concerns of the Irish people very well in terms of sport, because we had a slogan during the 1970s, which was "No normal sport in an abnormal society." That we cannot have a situation in a country where we continue to carry on like everything's normal when there are imbalances within society. So looking at that, would you say that the looking at the context of the current the current situation, and particularly in the broader European context, have we seen this kind of this kind of resistance from other European countries as well? Or is Ireland seeming to be the one who is most vociferous in its stance around the Israel and Palestine situation?
At the moment, it looks like it's Ireland and to some extent Spain. Mm. But there are a number of individual clubs, that have taken a very positive stand. In Spain, there's been a number of clubs, mainly from the Basque region, that have been very vociferous around Israeli teams playing in the Champions League and so forth. We know that Israel is not in Europe. In all intents and purposes, it's in West Asia, right? And therefore, they should be playing in the Asian League. But because they of their ethno-racist identity and the unfair discrimination and persecution of Palestinians towards ethnic cleansing, they were expelled from the, had to leave the Asian Football Association because no one wanted to play with them because of the history and the atrocities they commit. So they are by default within the UEFA league and federation status. Increasingly, I think there are challenges from individuals, from personalities, like in this case, the campaign to block the Israeli team playing is not just footballers. You're seeing a whole lot of artists, politicians, and so forth, all taking a very strong role in challenging the center. And we hope that we can see something positive from that.
And then also, just finally, looking at the call out there, what has been the response from the Football Association of Ireland and UEFA? Has there been any response to the call by these associations?
UEFA, there are certain other clauses that bind member states and federations to participate. So we know that. Not too long ago, the Bosnian players refused to shake hands with the Israeli players, but they were forced to play the game. Nevertheless, all faced sanctions and themselves being banned because obviously Israel is untouchable and immune to any sort of accountability for what they do. There's just general impunity. But anyone that opposes Israel can be sanctioned and have been sanctioned. So that is the challenge that the Irish Football Association is facing. Same thing we saw with Celtic, who were fined repeatedly because of their open support for the Palestinian people and against the genocide. So the double standards of UEFA and FIFA, I think, are glaring for everyone. In this case, in the case of Iran, in the case of Russia, the way they're sucking up to America and Donald Trump, all of these things just stretch the underbelly of a very corrupt football international body and European body.
Nazim Adam, sports analyst and political commentator, talking to us about calls that are mounting for the Republic of Ireland to skip a UEFA Nations League match against Israel later this year. And of course, we'll be following this story very, very closely. Nazim, shukran so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Shukran. Well, of course, prominent Irish footballers teamed up with celebrities in a campaign encouraging the Republic of Ireland to skip a UEFA Nations League match against Israel later this year. Now, as we heard, a campaign group named Irish Sport for Palestine had sent an open letter to the Football Association of Ireland accusing Israel of committing genocide during the Gaza conflict and violating UEFA and FIFA rules by permitting teams to compete on occupied Palestinian land. And as we heard, it seems like right now, it seems like only Ireland as well as to a certain degree, Spain has taken up this fight to protest the presence of Israel within the world of football, and particularly in relation to existing within the FIFA structure. And so when we look at this, and again, you know, I'd like your comments on 0829-913-913 around just as South Africans, we call Israel an apartheid state. We also draw similarities between Israeli apartheid and South African apartheid of the 1940s, and so when it comes to the issue of sport, South Africans, particularly in this community, particularly in South Africa, but also in the Western Cape, we all know too well that statement: no normal sport in an abnormal society. You cannot have sport in a society that is imbalanced. And we cannot allow, as some might say, an oppressor and the oppressed to be on the same playing field. Where is the accountability? And the questions are being asked of FIFA: where is the accountability as far as FIFA is concerned as a global sporting body? When we talk about the claims of genocide in Israel, when we talk about the human rights abuses and atrocities that are committed by Israel, where is the accountability as far as FIFA is concerned? So that is the question that is on the table. And of course, we'd like your comments, 0829-913-913. Well, of course, also, before we get into the news at 5:30, just also a little bit later on, we are going to be talking about the Portland community. They're hosting an interfaith prayer vigil in relation to gang violence and the scourge of drugs. We'll be speaking to Norman Yankees from Mitchell's Plains CPF to tell us a little bit more about the event. What I can tell you thus far is that it will be taking place at the Portland community, at Al Masjid Al Rabi out in Portland's in Mitchell's Plain. And of course, it will be taking place at 10 a.m. In the morning on the 16th of May in support of survivors and families of gangsterism and drugs. And of course, also, we are also talking about the fact that while this continues to be a problem on the Cape Flats, we have to ask the question, what role do authorities play in ensuring that, gang violence is brought under control? But more so, what is the role of community members? How do we play a role in keeping our communities safe? And I think this is at least one way where communities take accountability and where they try to fix the problems on the streets. So we'll be talking to Norman Yankees to get his idea on the current situation. Of course, also the need for this important initiative, this program, will be happening outside Masjid Rabi in Portland's in Mitchell's Plain. And then also, we also know that we're heading into the month of Dhul-Hijjah, which is known as the period that where Qurbani takes place. And VOC will have its annual Qurbani project. It's rolled it out about a week or two ago, calling on the community to come together in support of those in need. Now, the initiative focuses on providing essential relief to underprivileged families across the Cape, ensuring they are not left behind during this spiritually significant time. You're welcome to make any contributions, whether big or small, towards this. And, of course, the Qurbani that is conducted will be going to underprivileged communities. That meat will fill the plate and hopefully the stomach of very, very needy individuals. So please support the Voice of the Cape Qurbani Initiative. Check our social media pages. Continue to follow as we give you more details around this, inshallah. Well, also just letting you know that we also have a conversation that we need to have around, I think, something that is so critical, and that is in relation to gang violence and in relation to the amount of firearms that are on the streets at the moment. There's always been a conversation around gun control. In the United States, it's a big argument. There's a big argument around whether not people should own private guns because we see gun violence being a significant factor in crime rates and in murders in the United States. The question is around the owning of guns in South Africa Do you feel it contributes to the crime problem? Do you feel it dissuades from the crime problem? I would like your comment. Send us a WhatsApp, 0829-913-913. I'm talking about legal guns. I'm not talking about illegal guns. We know those have to come off the streets, but I'm talking about people who legally own guns. What are your views? What are your opinions around gun violence? Do you think legal guns contribute to the, you know, to the crime rate? People say, well, if you have a gun, it means that someone can steal it and someone can use it. There are also incidences where people lose their temper and they fire off their firearms. I would like your comments around this, around the issue of gun ownership. Do you think it contributes to the gun violence we see, or do you think it's a safeguard in your opinion? Are you a gun owner? Specifically, how do you feel about that? Send me a message, 0829-913-913. Well, it's gone 5:29. It's a few minutes out, or a few seconds out, or moments out from the news at 5:30, which, of course, will be brought to you by Kothar Sambo, not only journalist, but also the host, the producer of PM Jive. And, of course, as she sits down, it's now time for us to play the jingle.
Making headlines, prominent Irish footballers have teamed up with celebrities in a campaign encouraging the Republic of Ireland to skip a UEFA Nations League match against Israel later this year. A campaign group named Irish Sport for Palestine has sent an open letter to the Football Association of Ireland, accusing Israel of committing genocide during the Gaza conflict and violating UEFA and FIFA rules by permitting teams to compete on occupied Palestinian land. Keep your eyes peeled on our social media pages for the latest on this issue. Meanwhile, severe weather has caused widespread disruption across Garden Route National Park, with flooding, heavy rain and strong winds damaging roads and infrastructure. In the Wilderness and Nasness section, several roads remain blocked by fallen trees and mudslides, while hiking trails and recreational activities have been closed. And finally, the Portland community will be hosting an interfaith prayer vigil in relation to gang violence and the scourge of drugs on the 16th of May from 10 a.m. The meetup point will be in front of Masjid al-Rawi. Stay tuned after 5:30 for more on this. And that's it for your headlines. And we'll be back with news wrap this evening, inshallah. For VOC News, I'm Kothar Sambo.
This is PM Drive Traffic.
Well, your final traffic update for this afternoon. And yeah, you're really in the thick of things now. If you're heading out along the roads on Jake's Hadwell Drive, we're seeing traffic slow on the M7 southbound. That's, of course, around Valtafir and Valley North. That's 20 kilometers per hour, 8 minutes of travel time to get through that stretch of road. Archie Road, M68, in Archie, average speed of 17 kilometers per hour, 6 minutes of travel time. And Long Street in Central Cape Town, average speed of 4 kilometers per hour, 3 minutes to clear that stretch. From Maitland to Kingston, average on the N1 towards Paarl, 21 kilometers per hour, 3 minutes of travel time there. And Stellenbosch Road, M12. Average speed of 13 kilometers per hour, while from Eindhoven to Brentwood Park on Kells River Freeway, Arthian and southbound, average speed of 37 kilometers per hour, but 14 minutes to carry you through that stretch of road. Buck up and keep it safe running distance.
PM Drive. Markets.
Well, time to take a look at your markets. And she was, you know, it was so depressing when I opened up the Rand to Riyal. Because I recall a time in 2010 when a rial was like 180. Right now, the Saudi rial, if you would buy you 4.37 South African rands. So one Saudi rial currently costs 4.37, and that, of course, is as recent as today. Then just taking a look at the rand dollar price, a dollar will be 16.41 today. Well, the gold right now is $4,716.75 per fine ounce. And the Nikkei, we're told 62,700 and something that just moved away. This, I cannot see that right now. But of course, I've got some Bitcoin indicators as well. But no one really cares about Bitcoin right now, I suppose. Except there are some people who are passionate about Bitcoin. But yeah, I don't think the ordinary person generally has invested much time and effort in Bitcoin. Well, so yeah, that's your indicators. But again, gee whiz, 2010. I think it was 180 to Real to Rand exchange. So it's been a wild ride to get here, but inshallah we'll see what the markets do, you know, in the next couple of weeks.
Get in the game with the hottest sports action right here on The Voice of the Cape.
Well, of course, it's The Voice of the Cape, and it's time for a spot of sports. And who better to let us know all about what's going on in the world of sports rather than Ian Parker, who, of course, is recovering from his day of golf yesterday. I don't know if Ian did finally make it to the green. Ian, salam.
Assalamualaikum, a very good afternoon to you and to the Film Drive listeners. I made it onto the green, but as a spectator.
Well, as a spectator, I must say that, you know, for me, I think golf is a beautiful game, but it can also be a frustrating game. So definitely, you know, I enjoyed being a spectator with the lovely weather yesterday.
No, I told the latter. You know, I stood there, as I said, on the 11th hole, and I saw this guy team off, and I think the ball went about 15 degrees instead of the 180 it's supposed to go, you know, straight, or at least to a curve of 200 degrees, and then sway its way back in. But then I came up with the point of, you know what, I would have just taken anybody else's ball and said it's mine.
You do know those balls have numbers on them.
Thanks for that. Now you want to make it difficult. Yeah, you know, then I was just going to say, I don't have my specs on or something. You know, I said, okay, yeah, it was a mistake. I took the wrong ball. But yeah, I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they can say that golf is a relaxing sport, because I would be frustrated, you know, trying to get that ball into the hole with a certain amount of shots. You know, it's a level of accuracy, it's a level of a concentration.
Most definitely. I think, though, it gives me a new sense of respect for someone like Tiger Woods. And I know he's been out in the media for a while now. He's tried to make a comeback, you know. But at a young age, for him to be able to master the game, to have the presence of mind and just be able to quieten his mind, get onto a golf course and with precision. Because you really have to move as one. The golf club becomes an extension of your arm. Every movement, every you know, muscle in your body angled in the correct manner to drive that ball, you know, when you're doing the long drives. And also understanding and reading the green and, you know, the grain of the grass to know exactly how the ball is going to travel when you're doing the short putts. It's just an art. It's something that I've always just admired as far as he's concerned.
That's why I prefer to shout it down on Mr. Riff. You know, it's simple. It's very simple.
You're right.
You know, I looked at those guys, you know, very serious. Mm. And somebody needs to come and say, you know what, Ian, take my hand and say, let's go play around with golf and they'll teach me the don't take me to the Atlantic Seaboard where I can go and play putt-putt first. You know, get the eyes in there, and then we take it to the big one. But yeah, last night, let's focus on football. It's probably one of my strengths, not playing, but being a frustrator to the game and reporting on it.
Speak about football. I mean, what is your take on Real Madrid and the current situation that they're finding themselves in?
Look, it's going to happen. There's a lot of pressure, a lot of stress. I mean, there's too much player power happening at Real Madrid. That's one of the reasons that Alonso is not there anymore, because the players weren't happy with his style. And, you know, the difference between Alonso was that he was a hands-on coach. He would take you through the drills himself and not stand there like a young Paco would just stand on the as a head coach and have a first-team trainer. And they didn't like that because he tried to get the game plan to what he wanted, the blueprint, how he wanted it to play. And he wasn't lazy to show them how. So they got rid of him. And obviously you've got the ego that you've got to manage. And this one is not playing, that one's not playing. Real Madrid doesn't have a trophy for the year. You know, so they are out of the Champions League, out of running the league. I think it's El Clasico this weekend. I didn't quite check on that one. But Barcelona needs 1 point away. They're 1 point away from securing the La Liga. And that's unheard of Real Madrid. I don't believe that Arbeloa is a coach. For me, I still see him as a local right back. Years ago, he was struggling. So I don't think that he's got the tech. Just that little tactic to manage those egos, and that's why it's getting out of hand for him. There's the rumor that Jose Mourinho is putting that up to go back. But yeah, it's become, I see that the British media adopted the fighting club.
Most definitely. Also, you know, one thing that I think we've always been asking questions around is, it's particularly within European football, but there's been a question around French football now, most recently with the FIFPro ruling around conditions for French players and whether or not, particularly, I think national players are being treated fairly, you know, in competing. Your take on this ruling, but also beyond that, what that means for the for football? Because I think to a large degree we've seen situations where players have been abused and literally pushed to the verge of injury.
Look, there is a lot of that happening at the moment. It's happening across the football as well. You know, players come from the ABC and the third division straight into LFA football. And so the player rest is not there. And if you look again, it's another World Cup season, another World Cup year. So the players are going to be playing again right through 365. If you look at the French again, the French has the whole of Africa that they've got to call on. If you look at the French team, I think there's probably one national French player there that has been born in France. The rest is all born out of the country. And that is something that needs to be looked at as well. And if you get it, if you look at us again, something that I'm saying that we should be doing in South Africa, because we're going to, you know, we have the top league on the continent, and yet we don't have strikers. So I'm saying, find these strikers from, Peter Shilalewe, is one of the best strikers we've got in the country. Find that guy as an African wife. You know, he was an African passport.
Naturalize them, you say.
That's what you need to do. No, naturalize your players. Don't find them. I mean, the farmers are finding wine, so let's go and do the same about football and see if we can win this World Cup. You know, no disrespect to the players that we have. But yeah, that's just tongue-in-cheek in that sense. But don't forget, it's Bafana Friday. So I hope that you have your green and gold on and celebrating tonight, even though it's I think it's about just over a month away to the World Cup. June 11th.
One thing, you know, that we think about, this World Cup is going to be decidedly different for a number of different factors. How do you think, based on the preparations of the top teams, what do you think this World Cup is going to be all about?
Well, they're supposed to, World Cup brings about the spectacular, brings about the you know, the strength versus the up and coming. Mm-hmm. It also gives opportunity for a lot of players to showcase, and a lot of players put themselves in the window for shopping to go and onto bigger clubs from here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is where your scouts come out, and this is where the player comes and he performs at the highest level that he can. You know, in other countries where they play, where some players, if you look at, let's say a player from Mexico, Mexico. He might not win the World Cup, but when he plays in the Champions League, he treats that as a World Cup final. Here you have the continent, your country's best 11 going out on the field, going to represent, and that's where he can make a name for himself. So you look at the likes of, for a guy like Ikram Reyners, we would want him in that team because, I mean, he's a top striker in the country at the moment. You want to see him then get a contract to go overseas, you know, and just develop himself further, like Lyle Foster has. And go and prove yourself on the outside of the world. And then, you know, and then my other thing is always, you know, come back and give back. You know,
indeed.
If you've played overseas, come back and just plow back into the club that gave you the first kick. Come back and develop the country where you can. You know, what you've learned there, come and teach the rest.
Agreed.
But yeah, let's speak about Europe, what happened there. It's dominated by England, these European Cups. So what I can tell you, just report back to you there, Vasily, that Arsenal will take on defending champions PSG. That's in the Champions League final. You've got in the Europa final, you see Aston Villa up against German side Freiburg. And in the Conference League, we'll see Crystal Palace take on Spanish side Rayo Vallecano. All right, so that shows you the dominance of the Premier League at the moment. Okay? And then looking at the EPL, what's going to be happening this weekend? Toppers 1 tomorrow, the early kickoff with Liverpool up against Chelsea. They get the weekend underway. Chelsea not in a good state at the moment. Neither can I say Liverpool. I will maintain. Stay a little bit critical. I'll maintain that line. And then Fulham hosts Bournemouth. Sunderland takes on Man United. Brighton faces Wolves. At 6:30, Man City faces Brentford. Sunday sees Nottingham Forest up against Newcastle United. And then you've got Crystal Palace up against Everton. You've got Burnley, who's already relegated, taking on Aston Villa. And then I think the derby is a London derby. The game of the weekend is probably going to be West Ham and Arsenal. It's got a direct impact on both sides of the log. Arsenal, if they win, they'll maintain the gap, you know, and maybe have one hand on the trophy, whereas West Ham needs the points to stay in the Premier League. And then what's happening tonight, Stellenbosch is away to Durban City in the PSL. That's at 7:30. And I'm just looking at the weekend. You can see my Maketsi up against Orlando Pirates. On Sunday, we've got Sekakuni United up against Kaizer Chiefs. And then I just want to see Sundowns playing because I think they need to play. Yeah, Sundowns takes on Siwelele on Saturday. You know, so that Sundowns and Pirates are chasing for first and second in the league. And then obviously Chiefs is just my team. That's why we're reporting on it. And then your favorite other sport is IPL. Yesterday we saw the Super Giants beat the RCB by 9 runs with a Duck with Lewis method. And today you can see the Delhi Capitals up against Kolkata Knight Riders. I can tell you that the score I had there was that the Delhi Capitals weren't doing too well. They were 128-6 in the 19th over. You know, so it's a lot of high score. We've seen scores this week of 200+. And that, I think that's been the average. And then looking over what happens over the weekend, there's games tomorrow. It's the Rajasthan Royals up against Gujarat Titans. Sunday, double header, see the Chennai Super Kings up against Lucknow Super Giants. And then RCP's in action again against Mumbai Indians. And then moving over to rugby, the URC, the penultimate round is the Stormers away to Ulster tonight at 8:45. Tomorrow you can catch the Bulls host Zebri. And then the Sharks welcome Benetton to the Shark Tank. And then Leinster host the Inform Lions. And then just some club rugby fixtures that I've seen is that SK Warmers will host Villagers and Vineyards take on Dalhar. And then there's a MotoGP action. You can catch Brad Binder as he flies around the Bugatti circuit out in France. And then athletics, we see that the upset run, the 10K run has been cancelled for Sunday due to the adverse weather that's expected.
Mm.
That's it. Catch me tonight, 8 p.m. Ian,
before you go, I just have to ask you your prediction, because we know that Chelsea's lost their last 5 matches. What is your prediction of a scoreline between Liverpool and Chelsea?
I don't know. I don't know what team Klopp is going to put out. Maybe if he called me before the game, I'd say, but right now, I'm just going to say we want one goal more than the opponent. We're happy with that. But we need the 3 points. And that's it. You'll catch me tonight at 8 on Sports Central. That's all that for PM Drive Sports. I'm Ian Paco.
Ian Paco, thank you so much. And of course, as mentioned, he'll be back around about 8 o'clock this evening with Junaid as he brings you Sports Central. And we get all the latest news on sports. And not just that, but we'll also be talking to some personalities within sport in our community. It's always an incredible show because you get to see young talent budgeting talent that's on the show and see what's happening in our community. Well, it's time for us to take a bit of a break. When we come back, we'll continue. And then as promise, we'll be speaking to Norman Yankees from the Mitchell's Plain CPF. We'll be talking about this event happening on, I think it's the 16th of May 2026, and that's outside of the outside of Masjid Rabi. They're having an interfaith community prayer vigil, and that of course is for victims of gun violence, victims of gangsterism, and the gangsterism and drug situation that prevails in Mitchell's Plain at the moment and in our community in general.